About 10 years ago, I had an idea for a book. It took me a long time to start actually writing the book. At first, it just started as notes in the margins in my notebooks in classes, outlines, doodles, drawings, fantasies in my head. And once I did start writing it, it began changing and evolving, as ideas always do. When I was growing up reading, Douglas Adams was my favorite authors, and I even thought considering titling the book The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Afterlife. Now that title, that idea, that concept changed and evolved, but the theme, the kind of underlying ridiculousness of life, stuck throughout the book. I want to start with a quote from him. "For us, there is no longer a fundamental mystery about life. It is all the process of extraordinary eruptions of information, and it is information which gives us this fantastically rich, complex world in which we live." And so I started writing this series called Life Versus Death. While none of my series has been published yet, I wanted to find a way to make this accessible to people, and so here we are. Begin with Chapter 1, The End, Part 2. Like any other morning in downtown Chicago, traffic jammed the streets and waves of people flooded the sidewalks. The city was alive with the hustle and bustle of people trying to get from one place to another, preferably someplace warm, as they trudged through light snow. Unlike any other morning in downtown Chicago, the place people were trying to get was a place of safety, as an enormous winged serpent rose frantically into the sky and shook dirt and pebbles from its back. Its green scales glimmered in the late winter sun as it turned around back to roar a fresh breath of fire onto the panicked crowd fleeing down Michigan Avenue. Some victims immediately dropped dead, and those lucky enough to survive began stopping, dropping, and rolling, simultaneously thinking, "Thank goodness for this once-thought-useless skill," and "Holy shit, that's a real dragon." A particularly lanky man made safely around the corner onto Randolph Street, and he hit against one side of the Millennium Park Plaza Tower. He breathed a brief sigh of relief just a moment before a gigantic pale white snake erupted from the pavement beneath his feet, swallowing him whole and crashing down the ground. It slithered, satisfied, down an alleyway and past a pack of 200 dogs preying on a few bankers. It left a trail of rubble behind from its explosive arrival. Three friends stood atop a lonely hill in Douglas Park, a few miles west of the carnage. "Jesus," said Paul, the pale man who stood in the middle of the three. He wore blue and gray striped pajama pants, a white t-shirt, and a frown as he stared at the scene on the horizon. The details were not clear to him from this distance, but the screams and blazes of flame told him enough of what was happening. As his gaze drifted to his closer surroundings, he saw one of those all-too-familiar giant white snakes making its way down 13th Street. He ran both his hands through his hair, and dirt fell from his head. His mouth took a brief break from frowning when he saw some coarse red hair in his hand. The sickly-looking blonde man next to Paul brushed snow and dead leaves from his hoodie. Feelings of confusion, fear, anger, sadness, and hunger all clashed inside him when he heard the screams and saw the monsters loose in the city. He suppressed the feelings expertly. "Man, we sure screwed up this time, huh, guys?" he said. He put his hand up to feel a bruise on his forehead. Paul's eyes, previously heavy with melancholy, quickly narrowed. "We sure screwed up? How can you talk like that? We're in some shitty sitcom. Brendan, people are dying. Earth is swarming with actual monsters. We're hanging out with someone from the goddamn future. And all you got is, we sure screwed up?" "Just trying to lighten the mood, Paul." "This mood can't be lightened. We're responsible for this." "Well, if it's anyone's fault, it's Gary's," said Brendan. He shuffled his feet. "Gary saved us, you ungrateful ass." Their third ally regained her composure. She brushed the dirt from her slick black pants and her long black hair. She tried to look dignified, but failed. "If I may," said Jenna, the aforementioned someone from the damn future, "I believe I have a plan." "Yeah?" "Yeah. Let's get the hell out of here." Jenna turned and began carefully walking down the hill with purposeful steps, but Paul did not follow. He stood rooted in horror. He asked, mostly to himself, "Just, how did all this happen?" "You should know. You were there," said Jenna. Brendan nodded in agreement at the obvious answer. "I know that, but I mean, just a few days ago, I did not see life going this way." "Well, a few days ago, you weren't even..." Paul cut him off. "You know what I mean," Jenna said. "But now you're back. Lucky you. But really, let's get out of here." She turned away from Paul and continued down the hill. "Yeah, lucky me." A few days ago, Friday. Although Paul Truman knew how important he was, he did not take pride in the fact. He did not boast, he did not gloat, he simply did his job because he knew it had to be done. He said as much to the stranger sitting next to him at the bar. "And what is it that you do?" asked the man in response. "I protect the world from demons," said Paul proudly. The man nodded in quiet understanding, clearly unimpressed, unamused. He took a sip from his drink, set it back on the counter, and signaled to the bartender that he was ready for his check. The well-dressed gentleman tending bar that night could not get to the man yet, as he was busy with a crowd of strangely dressed youngsters a few seats down. He nodded at the men to let them know that he would be there at some point. Paul, meanwhile, took the hint that his barstool neighbor was not interested in what he had to say. He averted his eyes to his half-empty glass of cheap beer on the counter. The rest of the bar moved about aimlessly in a blur behind him. The stranger sitting next to Paul turned to address him, opened his mouth, and then closed it again. He looked as if he was having trouble remembering something very important. And then, before he got a chance to remember it, his skin promptly dissolved away from his body to reveal layers of muscle tissue. The muscles pulsed as blood trickled down over them, and then it too shed to the floor, leaving behind just a skeletal frame. The bones, no longer bound together, clattered to the floor around the bar stool, where a seemingly ordinary man once sat, now stood a 3-foot-tall impish being, free from his disguise. He wore a filthy tunic over dark red skin. Paul watched the transformation, not with any kind of surprise, but with self-righteous disgust. "Demon scum," Paul muttered. The creature shrugged off the last remaining sliver of fake flesh from its back. It pointed a small bony finger at Paul. "Blah! For the last time, we Ichaloids are not demons!" It reached behind its back, drew a sharp dagger, and leapt at Paul, who effortlessly smacked the imp out of air with his beer mug. He pressed his foot down firmly on the foe and took out his phone to call in the attack. Instead of ringing, however, his phone beeped loudly in his ear. The bar around him disappeared in a flash of light, and the next thing Paul saw was his bedroom ceiling. He reached over to his phone and turned off the alarm to stop the loud beeping. Paul always assumed he'd get used to these early mornings, but this was not quite the case. He never mastered his morning routine. He reached a long arm down to the floor and felt around under his bed until he found a spiral notebook. The words, "Dream Journal 4, took up the cover, and he flipped to a fresh page. Paul almost always remembered his dreams in vivid detail, and he frequently had lucid dreams. People have told him he was lucky in that regard. Some people train themselves to control their actions in their dreams, but Paul did it almost effortlessly. Paul did not feel lucky to have vivid dreams so often, though. He often found them very disorienting. They made waking up even more difficult than it should be. He began writing. March 2nd, 2012. I sat in a busy bar and talked to a man sitting next to me. I was a demon slayer and failed to hide my pride about it. It felt too good to be important. Once he finished transcribing the dream, Paul prepared himself for another day at work as a software engineer. But he decided today would take a considerable less amount of preparation, since he also decided that today would be his last day at this job. He planned on striding into his boss's office at 5 o'clock, shoulders back, head held high, and telling him, "Hey, I quit." He'd use his most confident voice, a cool guy voice. At first, he considered not just going to work that day at all, and quitting in that fashion, but he decided that wasn't good enough. Paul needed closure. Thank you for listening to the beginning of my book. I will continue reading in a later episode. My name is Mike Adams, and this is Life Versus Death.